Technically speaking.
Welcome to our Technically Untechnical Technology Talk.
A Nywik Atlantic production.
And an award-winning podcast with your hosts, Chelsea Holloway and Alex Jackson.
Hey, Alex, how have you been doing? How's your week been?
Hey, Chelsea. My week has been pretty good. It's been busy, but I'm grateful for another day.
That's good.
Wait, what about me? You don't care about my weekend anymore?
Jeez. How was your week, Joe?
Oh, so sorry, Joe.
Oh, my week was good. Thanks. Good.
So I had a brand new development this week. I have decided to quote unquote give up social media, kind of. So I made the step and I deleted the apps from my phone. So I still have my personal social media accounts, but I decided to delete the apps. And I was like, I'm done with all this scrolling. And one reason I did it is because I was watching some video and something like made sense to me, another like parent video, because I have a 2-year-old, for those that may not know. So I'm in the depths of terrible twos. And they were like, if you're at the point where you just want a break and you're scrolling and then your kid comes up to you and you feel like they're interrupting your scroll time, that's the wrong perspective. And I was like, wow, that is a very wrong perspective. So I just want to get off the phone a little bit, be more present. So I deleted the apps. It's a big deal, Alex. It's a big deal.
That's a good point, Chelsea. I find myself in the evenings scrolling through social media. I could be lost in it for hours and not getting anything accomplished. But I might have to take you up on that and probably take a break from the apps as well.
For real. Yeah. So I completely haven't let go, so I can still check my social medias. But it's just, yeah, I just need less. I need to be present more. And as a millennial, this is a big deal. You know, a lot of our lives have been on social media. So taking a step back, and it'll be a dual purpose. It'll allow me to spend more time with my kid. And it'll allow me to kind of free up my brain and not waste time at looking at a screen, which is good. So I love that dual purpose for giving up social media. So it slides right into our topic today with dual use or dual purpose technology that we have here at Nywik Atlantic. And we're going to be talking about that and our experimentation with it.
Coming up, we've got an interview with Greg Hayes, Nywik Atlantic's Director of Rapid Prototyping and Experimentation, and Lieutenant Commander Alberto Osvath, who is an Operations Manager for Nywik Atlantic at our Hampton Roads, Virginia location. They both explain their roles in the experimentation and feedback loop of different technologies developed here at Nywik Atlantic. So get comfy, turn up that volume, and let's get started.
Alex, before we dive too far into this topic, let's first explain what we mean by dual-use technology. So basically, it's technology being developed that can have both a civilian and a military use.
And in my interview with Mr. Hayes, he mentions GPS as an example. He also talks about how collaboration has helped strengthen our capabilities. Let's take a listen. I'm here with Greg Hayes. Thank you for joining us today. Can you tell us what you do here at Nywik Atlantic?
Hi, Alex. Thanks again for having me on board today. My title is the Director of Rapid Prototyping and Experimentation.
Can you describe what does experimentation of dual-use technology mean for Nywik Atlantic?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the most important things that we have on our plate right now. I also think it's worth mentioning that the transformation of commercial and dual-use over the many decades, back in the 1960s, so essentially 60 years ago, about 40% of the research and development that was going on in the United States was on the federal dollar, meaning that the government was sort of driving the conversation, right? They basically were resourcing the research. They were catering it to their unique needs. And we had some great things come out of that, like GPS, like internet, and a lot of good successes. Over the last 40 years, that pendulum has shifted. And now about 3% of the federal dollar is going towards the research in the United States, meaning that 97% of the other research is being funded by privately developed companies, commercial companies. And we need to take advantage of that. And that's why when I say commercial and dual use is to find that technology and figure out how to adopt it and not necessarily wait for the time it takes to develop it. And then we end up tweaking that technology to match the warfighter needs. So that's by far the biggest focus that is on my plate right now.
It sounds really interesting that you all can take things that are happening out in the commercial world and learning from other groups of people and seeing how that can be worked on here within the military aspect.
Yeah, especially in areas like autonomy. You see things like Tesla, you know, it has the self-driving piece. I mean, that vehicle is sort of getting smarter every day because it's tied into a network of other vehicles taking all those images and making the algorithms to make the navigation decisions that much more precise. Taking that and putting it on, say, an unmanned maritime vehicle that's out in the water, and we don't quite have the same reference data as far as all the targets that are out there to make decisions, but we're leveraging that, right? So we're putting a lot of technology that has had prior commercial use into the hands of the military, primarily in the areas of advanced communications. I mentioned autonomy and unmanned right now is sort of the big focus.
Could you give us an example or a scenario of the type of work that we do here at NIWC Atlantic?
Yeah, so over the last couple of years, we've seen a really big demand for what I call continuous operational experimentation. So we've seen these groups pop up. We call them task forces, like in the Central Command area, which is in Bahrain, the Naval Central Command. They set up a task force called Task Force 59. And we've been supporting that for over 2 years, and it is basically leveraging this commercial and dual-use technologies in the area of unmanned and AI to produce the maritime domain awareness, the ability to put sensors on the water that can sit there and monitor ship traffic, can make decisions on, trigger for potential awareness of what's going on in the battlefield. And by doing that, we've seen other commands have similar requirements in Naples, Italy, under the 6th Fleet Command. They just stood up Task Force 66, very similar area in the areas of like unmanned and AI. It's a little different application. They're kind of focusing on supporting the what's going on in Ukraine a bit more. And then we're seeing a lot of stuff in the Hawaii Indo-PACOM area, kind of getting ready for the Southeast Asia scenarios. Typically in the past, we've always done experiments, say here on base or on a land-based asset. Now we're seeing them to say, hey, come put your toys and your solutions in our environment. A lot of times the commercial sector will build something that is designed for, say, you and I to always have connectivity, to always have Wi-Fi, to always have access to cellular. But we, in these warfighter scenarios, sometimes those aren't an option, right? Or not even desired. So trying to bring that commercial sector into the military environment is sort of where the rubber meets the road. And that's where we're doing a lot of support to the warfighter, is to help China translate that.
Can you explain why NIWC Atlantic has that opportunity to be on the cutting edge of that technology?
Yeah, so I think Congress has recognized over the last couple of years the importance of leveraging sort of the Silicon Valleys of the world with the great ideas, the commercial technology that could be put into the military for advantages. So one thing that that we have here at NIWC Land is we're one of the 17 warfare centers in the Navy, but we're a different breed because we're not a traditional lab in the sense that we have the ability to bring in a very diverse customer set. Like, for example, we support the Navy and the Marine Corps primarily, but we also support, you know, DARPA. We support the Army. We support the three-letter agencies. We support, you know, Defense Health. And everybody can kind of bring in their resources to similar problems and take the benefit of everybody contributing to the solution. So it's sort of a crowdsourcing model, which is really good, especially in time of emerging technologies and keeping up with the pace. Now, being a warfare center, we are a nonprofit. We are, you know, paid by the taxpayers. So we don't have any bias to whose solution is better than others, other than the fact that it meet the requirement, right? So we make, you know, buy decisions based on, is it ready today? Is it meeting the requirement? Not necessarily, you know, trying to drive profits or margins or anything as well, because we truly are the honest broker here.
Can you describe what the engineers and scientists think as they are preparing this technology for experimentation?
When we do an experiment, we typically have the developers, and they could be in the government or largely outside, but they're in a venue, an experimentation that brings in the operators as well. So we have those on base here. We host them ourselves. We call them ANTXs, the Advanced Technology Naval Exercises. And we also do them into the fleet. The big Navy's got what's called FLEX, which is called Fleet Experimentation. So that's actually operating ships and with sailors and Marines, actually, you know, putting their hands and participating in this technology and giving immediate feedback. And we do that because it allows, you know, folks like us that are either making decisions on the best way to integrate, is to give that feedback back to the developer early on in the process. So they know that what they get may not be the best solution, but they would rather get the 80% solution today provide feedback and then immediately get the return back versus waiting 5 years for the 100% solution.
And with technology so rapidly changing all the time, it's great for that relationship between the developers and operators simultaneously to get things done. What are some of the challenges in the adoption and fielding of the technology solutions?
There's a culture that, you know, has these platforms that we have out there that last for decades, right? We got systems out there, whether it be a ship or an aircraft or systems on those platforms that have been around for 20, 30 years, you know, trying to get in the mindset of, refreshing that so fast that we don't encourage that, you know, multi-decade system anymore is a big challenge because it's a different mindset.
How important is it to you to have your team working, developing this technology and seeing what Navic Atlantic is doing to ultimately help the warfighter? What does that make you feel in your day-to-day work?
For me, it's incredibly rewarding. I think we all read the news and we understand that, you know, we're battling essentially, you know, three wars right now. And it's pretty obvious that we're keeping an eye on what's going on in Ukraine. We're pushing, you know, heavy with the Indo-PACOM area. And then we're obviously, you know, supporting NAVSENT with their eyes on the Red Sea. So we're on the edge right now, right? And we're on the edge at the same time trying to bring in these new ideas and trying to get after these changing technology areas. So it's a full-time job, but it's super exciting. And, you know, this is one of those jobs where somebody says, you know, it's not about the money, right? It's the career of significance. And I feel like that a lot of us feel that, you know, way right now, which is really a good feeling when you go home.
Well, thank you, Greg, for joining us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Alex, for having me.
Fascinating, Alex. I love hearing what we're doing here at Navic Atlantic and how we're using collaboration to benefit us. Now let's switch and listen to the other side of this whole loop, which is the feedback loop. We're going to be talking to Lieutenant Commander Osvath, and he's going to explain what he and his team are testing and why they give feedback to engineers and scientists. Then, as a bonus, he gives us a military moment update. Is he still planning to retire? Stay tuned to find out. And here's a little warning. We did record this interview on Teams, so the audio will sound a bit different. Let's take a listen.
Welcome back, Lieutenant Commander Osvath. It's great to be speaking with you again.
Great to be here, Chelsea. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Can you remind me, please, what you do with Navic Atlantic?
Yes. So currently I am the department head over in Hampton Roads in Norfolk, Virginia, and I'm also the operations manager for our IPT. Currently we have about 20 Marines and 78 sailors. What we do is we offer the service desk and we do installations of new software and we do upgrades to current software when it needs to. Part of my job is, you know, is I serve as a liaison between the fleet and the command.
You're working with Navic Atlantic scientists and engineers right now to kind of provide end user feedback and on maybe some new systems. Can you kind of enlighten me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so some of the new systems that the Navy's coming out with are NMRO, which is a Naval Maintenance, Repair, and Overhaul, and DOS, which is a Naval Operational Supply. So these are just new programs that are going to replace our current programs that we have.
And these are old systems, right? They've been around for a long time.
Correct. So we call them legacy programs, right? So it's just been in quite a while, so they're just outdated, you know, so.
Legacy is so much nicer than old.
Correct. Yeah. We just evolve. And that's kind of what the Navy does. We try to evolve and keep up with new technologies and stuff like that and be user-friendly.
That's where you and your sailors come in and you're kind of working with Navic Atlantic scientists and engineers.
Correct. So I think it was about a year ago, we had some engineers kind of come over and be like, hey, you know, we'd like to get a couple your sailors and Marines to come over to Fleet Forces and kind of work with us. And they'll be just doing testing and evaluation of the program. So we sent about 10 people over to Fleet Forces command. And then they were working with a couple of the engineers and a few other civilian contractors. And then they're just, you know, testing and, you know, writing codes and helping write these new programs. So when they do come out, it's it's easier for the user.
So what's like a perspective or something that your sailors can give to civilian scientists and engineers that they maybe wouldn't have thought of within these systems?
Real talk is that, you know, you're an engineer, you have, you know, you have a lot more education, you know, right, than maybe somebody that just kind of came into the Navy and is a 19-year-old straight out of high school. Exactly. And trying to use these systems that, you know, never have. So they have to be just user-friendly and then just kind of easy to navigate, I guess, is maybe the best thing that we can say. It's just something that's easy to navigate, because I know I've been when I was a young sailor, I was like, man, I don't understand why this is so complicated and how these things add up. And then you got to go through this block and you got to go to another block. And then you got to go to another, open up another window and then do another thing and then come back. And it just didn't, doesn't make sense. And you're just like, I just wish it was easier.
I'm a college educated person. And when I joined the Air Force, I was college educated, and I still have those thoughts. Like, why does it take so long to get? And it is very frustrating. And it's partially because, you know, there's a lot of steps that the government puts in place to make sure all these systems are secure.
Absolutely.
So that's part of it. But the other part is, yes, engineers think differently. So they depend on the end user, or they should, to make their system even better. So I think it's wonderful that Nyack Atlantic has their engineers and their warfighters communicating, and hopefully we've improved on that. Has your experience seen an improvement in that?
Absolutely. And you know what, I think with our IPT lead, you know, Stanchel Horse and a couple of the other people, you know, we have great ideas that just kind of get even a couple engineers or even contractors out in the fleet and go do tours, you know. And I think we've been talking with a couple people in Charleston, just do tours aboard ships or aboard a couple of the squadrons, just for them to interact, you know, and interact with those users and ask those questions and just see, you know, the struggles that the everyday struggles of a sailor aboard a ship.
Yeah. And that cross collaboration, getting people on board a ship physically there with you, could spark innovation, could spark a thought of like, why don't we create this? Or, hey,
absolutely.
You know, so I think it's wonderful what's happening. Now, where could you see maybe even more improvement that we could do here at Nyack Atlantic?
I think we could improve a little bit, maybe just kind of removing some hurdles, you know, to get the ball rolling on stuff, you know.
Maybe get some of that feedback implemented.
Correct. Yeah. You know, like we're good at getting the feedback. I think we need to get better at actually implementing it and making it happen.
Yeah, which in government, that sometimes that's pretty hard. But I think it's important to note, like, hey, if we're making the effort of getting the feedback, let's do the best we can to get it implemented. So I think that's great, and definitely something I know Nyack Atlantic wants to do. So we'll have to take a look at those hurdles and make it happen.
Absolutely.
I talk as if I can do that. I'm just here to do the interview.
you never know who's listening though, right?
That's right. So I love having these discussions because I learn so much, honestly, which is one of the best parts of my job personally. Mm-hmm. So I would like to kind of transition into our military moment. You provided a military moment for us a few episodes ago. So now that you're back, I'd love to kind of get an update and ask you about how things are going. Last time we talked, you said you'd been in the Navy for about 24 years. And yes, retirement is on the horizon. Is that still the plan for you?
So I recently had, or last July, I had a baby with my wife.
Oh, and
yeah, thank you. So I think just the seeing her every morning, you know, with the big old smile on her face every time she wakes up, has just really, you know, made my decision to absolutely retire a lot easier. So I don't want to, I just don't want to deploy anymore. And, you know, deployments are getting harder and they're just longer and harder. I'm just like, I just can't leave her and, you know, not see that. anymore.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah,
but let's reminisce a little bit on this wonderfully long career you've had. Can you just tell me a short story about like a fulfilling moment that you had in your Navy career?
I had just gotten commissioned, you know, and I went to my first squadron. So I'm an aerospace maintenance officer by trade. When I was at Strike Fighter Squadron 105, the Gunslingers over in Oceania, we deployed aboard the USS Eisenhower, and we were headed toward the Middle East and in support of Operation Inherent Resolve. And we were just sending airplanes left and right to Syria, to Iraq, to Afghanistan. And I think in a total of 6 months, we dropped about 365 bombs. So that was pretty gratifying just to, you know, every morning we'd put three to up to nine bombs on an aircraft and then launch it out. And then 6 hours later, they'd come back with nothing on and then hit targets. And it was very satisfying to see that we were part of it and part of the operation supporting the troops out there.
Great. So thanks for speaking with me. I won't hold you up anymore. And it's great to hear about the work you've been doing currently with all the software systems and in the past with being able to support Operation Inherent Resolve. And then, of course, enjoy your little girl and your retirement. Yep.
Thanks, Chelsea. Thanks for having me again.
There you have it. He's going to be ending his career after 24 years because he wants to spend more time with his family. I think that's very sweet. Well deserved.
Appreciate his service, and I know he's excited to spend more time with his family.
Yep, and maybe he'll do the same thing and have a little less technology time, because those young kids, they'll eat at your time, Alex.
Definitely. I'm sure you can relate, Chelsea, with your young one and wanting to keep them entertained and busy all at the same time.
Yes, and alive. Got to do my best to keep them alive. So it was great hearing about that. And it's awesome to hear from Mr. Hayes and Lieutenant Commander Osvath how our collaboration, how that whole loop, that feedback loop, them working together is creating much better technology for the end user in some ways, for our military members.
Yes, it's amazing to see the process from the beginning stages to the end and how all the planning that goes into making sure that we can provide those resources to the warfighter.
Love it. I'm learning something new every episode, Alex. Every episode we have, we get to learn a little bit more about NIWC Atlantic. And if you want to learn any more about NIWC Atlantic or anything that we've mentioned here in the podcast, check out our social medias under NAVWAR or our NIWC Atlantic website. Links are in the description.
That wraps up another episode. Thank you for listening. If you have a tip or story that you think should be included in this podcast, please contact us at our public affairs email address, which is listed in the description.
Naval Information Warfare Center Atlantic, also known as NIWC, is the East Coast branch of the Naval Information Warfare Systems Command within the Department of the Navy. We develop a range of technologies that provide state-of-the-art capabilities to the United States military.